Think about James Whitmore Jr. He was in, God, all kinds of stuff. Of course, he's in Rockford,
Yeah, he was.
obviously. Why are we talking
I
about him?
great. I love his character in Rockford.
Yeah, he was great because, well, he was re a recurring character. Always had, he had the
Beamer? Beamer. It's been a
Beamer.
while since I've listened to him. I saw those episodes, so.
And he had a like tape in his glasses, like I used to as a
Sort of
kid.
the stereotypical nerdy thing.
Yeah, his father was a that's the, we have the junior because his father was also an
Although weirdly, actually weirdly, his father was Junior. He was the third.
really.
Yeah,
Okay.
but his father went by just by James Whitmore, and so he went by James Whitmore Jr.
Sure, because they didn't want to think that maybe it was like a Napoleon the Third
Yeah,
situation.
exactly.
Yeah, he was, and you know else he was great in something we both
That?
love,
What's that?
Baba Black Sheep.
Oh, yeah. You know what? We're going to have to do a Baba Black Sheep podcast at some point. You know that, right?
Yeah, I think I know that.
Yeah, okay.
By this request is General Claire Chennault and his Flying Tigers, whose mercenary band have successfully been turning back the Japanese bombers as they search for targets over mainland China. So one by one, these valiant Americans leave China and head back to their American units to fight in the South Pacific, with a special thanks from Chiang Kai-shek and the entire Chinese populace.
Hey, those of you listening to this who are having this dropped into your feed of your Mad Men feed, that you're going, whoa, there's a new episode. I didn't know there were any more episodes. There aren't.
No.
This is also dropped into your Rockford Files feed because we don't care. What did you pay for this?
Yeah, you
This
get
is
what you pay for.
bonus. This is a bonus.
Yep.
Welcome.
All complaints go to Oliver Rockside.
Yes, exactly. They're all his fault.
Yeah.
Or his manservant, Anthony Marco.
Yes.
Oh, that's the. I'm just now imagining Anthony dressed up in like a little Kato outfit attacking Oliver. It is, yeah. So just saying.
And occasionally bring him a nice tea on a little platter,
Yeah, that's right.
because Oliver doesn't drink, so
That's right.
so or maybe a lemonade. I'm not sure what he drink. Maybe lemonade. Bring him
Maybe
a lemonade.
lemonade or just a pack of cigarettes.
A pack of cigarettes and a taco.
Pack of cigarettes and a taco. Actually, that's there are times in my life when that was pretty much how I survived. Yeah, of course we're going to do this. This is an ep we're going to do a podcast about the Baba Black Sheep / the Black Sheep Squadron, which is a show that was on for two seasons in the mid 1970s that only Steve and I watched.
Yes.
That's not entirely true. It had some success, but it's not streaming anywhere. You have to buy the DVDs, which both of us have.
And the title of our podcast is Bullington's Bastards.
Yep.
I want to be the first one to say that.
Yeah, I'm glad you
Bullington's
did.
Bastards.
Yeah. And there's a reason for that. Steve, what's the
Yes.
reason?
Well, all fighter outfits, fighter units had a nickname. And because and we'll as we'll go through we'll talk about the 214 squadron, but they were kind of misfits, not kind of in the same way that they were in the TV show,
No.
but they were just kind of people that had no affiliation with any
They
other
were
fighter outfit, so they just kind of brought
unattached
them together.
pilots. They were
Yeah,
unattached
exactly.
pilots. So that part of the pilot, which is what we're going to talk about half of today's troop. Yes.
Yeah, and so they wanted to create their nickname, and so they wanted to call themselves Bullington's Bastards,
Which is pretty great.
because nobody else wanted them,
Yeah.
and of course Greg Bullington, Pappy Bullington, was the commander, so he's the Bullington's Bastards, and the Marine Corps went no.
No, because we
No.
have PR people that are going to write you up in the
Yeah,
newspaper,
exactly.
and you need a better name.
Exactly. Yeah, Bullington's Bastards. We can't put that on our newsreels.
Exactly.
So they came out with the Black Sheep Squadron.
And if you look at the official, and the squadron still exists, it's now called VMFA because it's a fighter slash attack squadron that flies F-35 Lightning IIs now. But on their patch, they still have a Corsair, which is I find it actually really cool. And I kind of get, this is stupid, I kind of get choked up by it because it's a neat callback to their history.
Yeah.
So I like that. It's also the case that they there's the Corsair on there. They also have the diagonal black line, which is the official signal in heraldry of being a bastard, which is great that they have that there. And the squadron still exists in it. I don't know where it is right now. It's in every war America's fought in since World War II, the Black Sheep have been in it. So, and they still call themselves the Black Sheep. I like to think that they sing that song that you would have just heard. They probably don't. But I like to imagine that they do.
Well, when they're drinking.
I think when they're drinking, you got to know that.
Yeah.
My hope is that they're all right now listening to this. Hi, guys. And perhaps women, because women are, there are women fighter pilots in the U.S. Marine Corps now, too. And I don't. And if anybody calls any of those women's pappies lambs, I bet they get the shit kicked out of them. Anyway, we're going to talk about this. We're going to go through this. We're going to do maybe one of these a month. This is the only one that'll be in your Rockford file slash Mad Men feed. We're just doing that because we can, and we're going to force you to listen to it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the rough plan, you know, as Dave said before we started recording, we just make this shit up as we go along.
Yeah.
You know, and again, all complaints at Oliver Rockside on the Twitter. Yep. But I think the rough plan is that we'll do 3 weeks of Rockford and then 1 week of Bubba Black Sheep.
Yeah. And I think that's sensible. So just quickly about the show, I guess, to begin with, I mean, you watched the first run as a kid?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I watched it. I mean, as a kid, I was huge into World War II, right?
Like, oh, really?
I mean, yeah. Yeah.
Really? What's that like?
I don't know. You know, I'm sure you don't know that.
No, I've just spent all week burning copy, you know, ripping Rat Patrol and Hogan's Heroes episodes. But yeah, I know nothing about that. Yeah.
Yeah. No. Yeah. So yeah. So I was huge into World War II. As a history buff.
Yeah.
You know, all that kind of stuff.
Sure.
I ended up doing my PhD on war literature, Second World War literature. I managed to take my hobby and turn it into my job.
Indeed. That's the way to go.
You know, which I feel very proud of that.
You should be. That's most people can't do that. Most people don't end up doing that. So that's
and not last class, but the class before. I'm teaching a first year English course over the summer.
Right.
And we did a bunch of war poetry, and I started the class by saying, professors will always try and cram their area of specialty into any class they can get, because we don't often get a chance
to
teach our area of specialty. And I said, so that's my way of saying you're stuck listening to the shit that I want to talk about in this class. And so we did some World War One stuff, World War Two stuff, and some Vietnam War poetry. And it was like, so this is me just doing whatever I want. So it's like, you're going to have to suffer through.
I get a lot of that too. Why is this class so much about animal memory? Because that's what I know. Next.
Yeah. Yeah.
That it's not about ever Bubba Black Sheep.
Yeah. And so when Bubba Black Sheep came on, you know, I was what? It came on in 76. So I was like 9.
Yeah.
Right. You know, perfect, you know, kind of for this
perfect
kind of show.
Perfect for something like this too, which is at best a stylized treatment of World War II. But it's also, and we will find this as we go along, there are serious things that happen. And sometimes they're treated not greatly, but other times it's done with really nicely done. And
I mean, you and I both talked about this.
Yeah.
There could be a really great reboot of this show.
There, if Ron Moore is listening and got a hold of this, because I've heard him talk about how much he loved the show. And he redid Battlestar Galactica.
Yeah.
So I can just, if Mr. Moore, if you're listening, or John Rogers, who's a showrunner who I actually know from L.A. John, you could also do this. Maybe make a realistic reboot of this show. It'd be great, because the story of Pappy Boeington is an incredible one. Yeah. It's kind of like a bit this opening, we're going to do this in two parts because it's a two part, well, it's not a two, it's a pilot, it's double length. So
yeah, it was like Rockford Files was. Rockford Files started off as a TV movie, and this started off as a TV movie.
Yeah. And I remember seeing an interview with the guy who played TJ, whose name I just forgot. On of all McGinty. Places. Yes, that's right. And I saw him on of all places, the Alan Hamill show being interviewed a long time ago. Mm-hmm. And him saying, you know, they made the TV movie. They showed it to some execs and they said, make that. So they had to go back and get the planes.
Yeah.
Because the original planes, there are five actual working Chance Vought F4U Corsairs in this movie, a show, which you will see flying sometimes. You'll also see a lot mm-hmm. of stock footage. You'll see some stock footage that isn't even in the right theater of war.
You'll be watching, and suddenly there's some Spitfires going by. Hey, wait a minute.
No one knows why. The Japanese got Spitfires? But yeah, so there'll be a lot of moments of Steve and I laughing at equipment and things. Anyway, he talked about that and how the execs liked it, and they immediately had to go back and buy the planes. And, you know, the cast is pretty great. You've got Robert Conrad, obviously, as Pappy Boeington, who's just
great.
The ultimate 70s tough guy.
Yeah. And for those of you who want to know how he played that, look up his Energizer battery commercials.
he's basically playing, you know, Robert Conrad could play one role and he played it well, and it was Robert Conrad. And that's not a criticism. There's a lot of actors that do that.
Yeah.
You know, and he's really good at playing Robert Conrad as a Marine, as a secret agent in the Old West.
Yeah. Because he was in the Wild Wild West, you know, and then he was in a Columbo episode, Exercise in Futility with a Fatality with Gretchen Corbett.
Mm. Right. Yeah. I mean,
in a bikini. He spends most of the episode without a shirt on, but
of course he does. that's on brand. There's some people would know. Dirk Blocker, who's in was in Brooklyn Nine-Nine. Simon Oakland,
Oakland's great.
He really is, you know, he's one of those actors that was a character actor in TV shows in the 50s, 60s, 70s, and made a living. I don't think he ever had a starring thing on a show, except
he was in Kolchak. But
that was
show. He wasn't the main guy. But because that was Darren McGavin, but he played sort of McGavin's boss. So he was in most of the episodes.
Right. Who else do we have here? Dane Elkar, who was in all kinds of things.
MacGyver.
MacGyver, right?
Yeah, he was in MacGyver.
MacGyver.
I always hear it in the Simpsons voice, MacGyver.
I always think of MacGruber from SNL.
I also, when I thinking of Simon Oakland, I always play this game. Was it Simon Oakland or Claude Akins? Because I always confused the two. Was Simon Oakland in that role, or was it Claude Akins?
Simon Oakland in Devil's Brigade, or was that? Great. That's great. W.K. Stratton played one of my favorite characters, Larry Casey, probably the only straight-laced normal guy on the show. I don't think he did a whole lot else. Jeff McKay was French. I liked French. Yep. One of my favorite characters.
French. He was in Tales of the Gold Monkey.
There you go. I mean, that's look, ladies and gentlemen, if you ever want to make Steve happy, just mention Tales of the Freaking Gold Monkey.
Exactly.
Robert Ginty was TJ. Yep.
And McKay's cousin who got him into acting, Robert Redford.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
That's good. Larry Minetti was Bob Boyle. He was also in Battlestar Galactica.
And Magnum.
And Magnum, of course. Well, I didn't watch Magnum, so I actually think Magnum was his big.
Magnum was his big. He played Rick in Magnum.
Right. And of course, now here's one that a lot of people get surprised by, and that's John Larroquette, who played Bob Fielder. Anderson. He's kind of the intellectual of the group. I think he's supposed to have been.
Yeah.
Maybe a graduate student at an Ivy League school.
Yeah, I think he was. If not. I think they mentioned it throughout, and we'll probably pick it up. But yeah, I think he was supposed to be at the very least, he had been to university.
Yeah,
even if he hadn't graduated yet, because when the war starts. But yeah, he occasionally you see him playing an instrument, clarinet, which Larroquette can play. I mean, Larroquette is a musician as well.
And they often, it's funny because a lot of time later on the show, a character will be introduced, Sergeant Micklin, who calls them all college boys because they were all college boys. I mean, most fighter pilots were actually university students who joined up, right? And of course, we mentioned James Whitmore Jr., we're eventually going to get to people. Joey Oresco as Hutch. I liked Hutch. And Red West as Sergeant
Red
Lincoln.
West. He's great.
Elvis's bodyguard is in this show, ladies and gentlemen.
Part of the Memphis Mafia.
It's such a 1970s show, right? Like, you've got Robert Conrad and Red West. You've got a bunch of nurses that ended up in it too, including Nancy Conrad, Brianne Leary, Denise Dabari, who was I guess you'd probably call her the heartthrob of the women. And a lot of other people too. And Jeb Stuart Adams played Jeb Pruitt, who was probably the worst character in the show.
Oh, yeah.
We'll get there in a couple of years.
That was the final season when everybody just went,
It was like, we need somebody that'll be on Tiger Beat. The teeny bop girls don't want to see Robert Conrad with his shirt off.
So it's Sean Cassidy's already on Hardy Boys, so we can't get him.
It's a show of its time. You know, we'll talk about it as we will, whatever, but we did Mad Men, which is an important TV show. We are doing Rockford, which is an important TV show. This is just a TV show. I wouldn't call it important.
Sure.
You know, but still, we both liked it, and we've been talking about it, and we even recorded the thing on my phone that I lost at MNPR, 5 years ago, and I lost
something
it.
Something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I say let's talk about it.
All right.
Okay.
All right.
Right. So one first thing I noticed at the beginning is you don't get the song that you normally get, which is when they say, "We are poor little lambs who have lost our way." We do get a newsreel about the Flying Tigers, the American Volunteer Group, or the AVG, who were basically mercenaries, right?
They were. The Japanese, this was before Pearl Harbor, were fighting. Roosevelt wanted to get into the war, but couldn't officially because there was a big anti-war feeling in the United States. Ends up being the Lend-Lease program in Europe with the British. So what he does is he kind of gets the military to form this unit, this fighter squadron in China, unofficial, as it were, to fight the Japanese, or at least to help the Chinese fight the Japanese. Because if you don't know, Japan, I mean, and without getting too much into a thing, there's a real debate about when the Second World War begins, because everybody says 1939, and people are going, but Japan,
a lot of
China
people in China
fighting,
saying 1937.
Yeah, exactly. So he sends this unit over there organized by Claire Chennault.
Yep, and they are technically members of the Chinese Air Force.
Yes,
but they wear, and you'll see on the back of Chennault's jacket, he's wearing a blood chit. It actually says this is an American pilot. In Chinese, I think it says this is an American pilot, and then it says what his blood type is. It's a way to say, okay, this guy, if he gets shot down, help him. He's one of us. They're sort of the gray area between mercenaries and a foreign legion. So they're kind of like, there's some, you know, special ops people now in Ukraine fighting for Ukraine who joined the Ukrainian armed forces, but they all speak English. It's that kind of thing. It's plausible deniability. Though everybody knew they were there. It wasn't like, but it's like, no. And this, we see this at the beginning. Greg Boeington isn't a Marine. He's resigned his commission in the U.S. Marine Corps. He's a civilian contractor. We open up with Greg's in the hospital. He's lying there, and it's funny. He gets woken up, and the first thing he says is, "Does anybody have a bottle?" I'll say this, the show, and this is probably partially because it was from the 1970s, is very open about the Greg Boeington was an alcoholic.
He was not.
And
by
he was
his own admission.
Oh, yeah.
He admits he was an alcoholic.
He said that he's one of the few people that came out of a Japanese prisoner of war camp healthier than when he went in because he stopped drinking. Now, I don't think that's actually true.
Because if you know Japanese prisoner of war camps, they were not pleasant places.
They were not. They weren't Stalag 13.
No, they were not. More like the Hanoi Hilton.
But not quite as nice.
Yeah, exactly.
So Greg's in the hospital. wakes up like that. And he's going to go off to a wedding to be a best man. And I remember in the book, Bubba Black Sheep, he does attend a wedding.
I have the book right here. Look at that.
I'm
reading the book. I haven't finished it. It's been years since I've. Yeah. I'm on page 129.
Okay.
I haven't read the book since like the 1970s.
Same here.
It came out in 1958. So, he was in a plane crash and he broke his legs.
Yeah.
And so, but a friend of his was getting married, so they kind of
hauled him off
to the wedding. Yeah.
And they take him there, and eventually there's an air raid by.
Yep.
Well, when those Bombay doors open, those weren't Japanese planes.
No.
You mean I'll kiss the bride? Now let's get the hell out of here.
Yeah.
And they escape and they drive to the airfield. Yep. So, and that's some, when the planes drop the bombs, that's some stock footage from something. And it may even be newsreel footage for all I know. Yeah. So Greg, then we see Greg talking with Chenault, and the running joke there that, you know, that dog's against regulations. And
you'll see he has a dog.
He's a pit bull, right?
Yeah.
And he's like, well, don't worry, just take it away. And of course he bends down the dog. So he does it.
Meatball.
And they use the word meatball a lot. Because I think they don't want to use something racist. I think they're trying to...
or as he does in the book, Japs.
Yeah, because that's what they were called. People use that word.
I get why you call it, but from today's standards, it's like, ugh.
It's, ugh. You kind of, every time you see it, you know. There's a couple of times in the show, I think, where they do say Jap, but mostly they use meatball, rice ball. And that's referring, of course, to the
still offensive, but not quite as offensive.
Yeah, meatballs are made up. Rice ball are made up.
It's kind of like Negro rather than the other N word.
that's fair.
Right? It's kind of like that. Offensive, but not quite as offensive.
Not quite as offensive. That's right. And it's also an invented slur, so you can kind of go, okay, true. They invented it for the show. But he's got the dog, and the thing is, Greg wants to get paid by Chenault. And it's true that Chenault didn't always have money to pay the pilots, right?
Yeah. That's they only got paid at the end of the month because they literally didn't have money.
Yeah,
like I don't even mean enough money. I mean any money to give to the pilots.
Yeah, I mean, I think the reason that Greg Boenken eventually forms the Black Sheep the way he did is like, well, I've been doing things by the seat of my pants since this war started.
Exactly. And Boenken was there for the money.
Oh yeah. Yeah, this wasn't some sense of doing the right thing, though. In the book, he does talk about how it was the right thing.
Yeah,
but he was there for the coin.
His main motivation was for the money because it was the Depression.
Exactly.
And he had a family, and he had a lot of debts.
Yeah.
And they said, "Here, we'll give you $500," which was a lot of money back then.
Yeah.
You know, it's a fair chunk of change now, but back then it was for every Japanese pilot. And a Japanese plane you shoot down, and so he's looking at his income and he's looking at his debts and he's going, hey, I could do that. So you know, he literally was a mercenary. He went to war
for money. Yeah, and like I said, it's not something that here's how much money that is, because it just coming out of the Depression. You know how when we did the Mad Men one, we would always multiply things times 8. With Rockford, we multiply things times 5. Right now, you multiply things times 17.6.
Yeah.
So that's a lot of freaking money, because the dollar had devalued so much because of the Depression.
That's per plane, too. So, you know, if you knock down 5.
Yeah.
That's 5 times 500. And it's like, woo.
Yeah. So it's 2,500. And that's going to be. So I want to make sure I get this proper. One of the reasons that there were two things going on, he was having trouble getting the times 17.5. So it's the equivalent of $43,000, Steve.
Yeah.
Like it's real money he's after.
And yearly income.
Yeah.
Was not that.
No, most people weren't living that well. That's right.
That was yearly income was probably 10 grand at the most.
Yeah. So he's coming out of this perhaps with real money. And also part of the problem was there was some controversy about that Chenault also didn't want to pay, apparently, from other things I've read, for two Zeros that were destroyed on the ground.
Yeah.
And Boynton was like, the contract says destroyed planes, sir.
Yeah.
So, so anyway, he's not getting paid and he's pissed off. Claire Chenault wasn't the stuffed shirt that he's made out to be in the show. He really wasn't.
No.
Yeah, and Claire Chenault was doing this to help China. Like, he was doing this to be a good person.
Because his wife was Chinese, wasn't she?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, his wife was Chinese. That's right. Yeah. And to do this kind of operation, you need a guy like Chenault.
Yeah.
You can't for this kind of operation, you can't have a stuffed shirt.
No, you couldn't. You'd have to have somebody who
you need somebody
stuff.
Like Boynton to do this kind of stuff. Because it's so under the board, under the table, kind of, you know, on the QT, that kind of thing. You need somebody who doesn't care, can work without regulations and stuff like that.
Exactly.
I should also point out that Chenault is played by George Gaines.
That's true.
From Police Academy and your favorite TV show, Punky Brewster. That's going to be a running thing now.
Your favorite TV show
is Punky Brewster.
That's fair. Do that. I've watched it 35 times on like Mad Men.
Yep.
Folks, I've never watched the show. next we see, so Greg steals a P-40, a Curtis P-40. Goddamn, a pretty airplane, eh?
Yeah.
And mostly because of that mouth thing that they draw in the front, still do it with A-10s, with A-10 Warhawks. Yeah. They still draw those. It's impressive and cool looking. And if I'm not mistaken, it was actually invented by the Germans on a different aircraft. But they didn't do it very often.
No.
But then the Americans were like, this is cool. All the Allies. Because anybody who flew P-40s. I don't think the Russians did it when they flew P-40s.
No, because the Germans were doing all that kind of, you know, terrorizing of things like with the sound, like the Stukas dive bombers.
With the brakes.
You know, and so, you know, part of what they did it for was kind of this kind of morale thing to destroy the enemy morale. I think the Americans just did it because it was cool.
It was cool.
And they liked the idea of being sharks.
Yeah, as is typical, and this is not a criticism at all. A lot of people who join, I have a friend who's in the Air Force, and they say, you know, everybody else in all other branches of the military are roughly the same. The only people who are different are pilots. They like going fast and blowing things up, and their politics are all over the map. And they're just an entirely different set of people.
I'm listening to a podcast about American presidents, and they're doing George H.W. Bush.
Right.
I'm not a fan of Bush.
Sure.
As you know.
Yeah.
But, you know, the weird thing that I always found is that he was seen as the weak president. And Reagan was seen as a strong president when Reagan spent most of the war in Hollywood, whereas George Bush was a fucking war hero.
Exactly. Like an actual honest to goodness war hero.
He was in a torpedo dive bomber.
Yeah. He was shot down.
He was shot down. He was almost killed. Two of his friends were killed at the same time.
Yeah. And other friends of his were captured, and there was cannibalism involved by the enemy. I'm not going to go into the story because he was
almost captured by the Japanese.
Yeah.
You know, he was seen as the weak one. I don't think so, actually. Like I say, not a fan of his politics.
Fair enough. That's not entirely fair. Yes.
But, you know, the dude saw combat and he was offered the opportunity to go home after his two friends were killed and he shot down.
Yeah.
He said, no, I'm going to go back.
And he said, not going to do it. I'm sorry.
Whereas Reagan was complaining because he was making less money
Oh yeah, exactly. I always figured that me and George H.W. Bush could probably get along just fine. Yeah. I could talk to the guy.
Yeah.
Be okay.
Like I say, I'm not a fan of his politics, but you got to give credit where credit is due.
And,
you know, he put his life on the line, you know, in ways that other presidents didn't.
Exactly.
And I don't mean Trump. I mean, Reagan.
It's funny that the idea that the whole bunch of fueled armed fighters sitting on the tarmac at night is ridiculous. That wouldn't be the case.
No. And in the book, he actually says that they kind of pushed them off, almost pushes them into the jungle so that the Japanese won't see them.
Be able to see them, exactly. So Zeros, he gets comes comes come upon by a couple of zeros, and I don't think those are actually zeros. I think those are North American T6 Texans. That's what's usually used in movies and TV, because yeah. There's not a lot of surviving zeros. There's like four or something. Like, there's not a lot of them. There's one in the Smithsonian, which I've seen, which is pretty amazing to see. To see an actual zero. But the zero was a hell of an airplane early in the war. It was probably not the fastest, but the most maneuverable plane probably in the world in the early 1940s. But the Japanese didn't ever go any further with development of the aircraft. So it gets outclassed very quickly. By the time, in fact, this show is being made, by the time this show is taking place in the mid part of the war, the Zero is completely an outclassed aircraft at that point. But it gets jumped on. Originally, by the way, the Zero was called the Zeke. As the reporting name. All the Japanese planes were given names, kind of like how we talk about a Fox Bat or a Fencer for the Russian planes. So it's the same kind of idea here. Originally it was going to be the Hemp, but they said, the Hap rather, but Hap Arnold was the commanding officer of the U.S. Army Air Force. They said, no, we can't call it a Hap.
Yeah.
And they called it a Hemp sometimes. They usually called it the Zeke, right? And you also noticed that there's a couple things. First of all, they're way too close when they're shooting. There's no way you're flying 30 meters behind somebody and shooting at them. It's hundreds of meters. It's not a whole lot more than hundreds, though. Like, half a mile is what you hear that Buzz Berling documentary both of us watched, and they were amazed at how he could hit somebody from half a mile away. You got to be pretty close with guns. Also, you have maybe 10 seconds of ammunition. Whereas Pappy has, in this scene, unlimited ammunition. That happens a lot in fighter squadron, whatever things in TV and movies.
Except if you need it for a plot point.
Yes.
The only time it runs out is if the plot requires it to run out.
That's like,
damn.
Yeah. Oh, look, James Garner's now counting the number of bullets.
Exactly.
Anyway, so he now shoots down. Is it one or two of them he gets? So now he's got seven. I want to count how many he actually gets, because in his real life, Greg Boeington gets 28 and a half kills. So far he's got seven. Let's see how far he goes. Lands. And did it look to you like he was landing really at Mach 4.77?
Yeah, it kind of. It was probably China, but you know.
I think it's supposed to be China.
It does. There are and I have no doubt that sometimes they were influenced by Mach, because there are a couple times when I get a very Mach-like feel.
Yes. The show can be very irreverent like Mach, but it's not a comedy like Mach.
No.
And it's a lot more, isn't war fun, which Mach was never like.
No.
So there's a bit of that. Anyway. Let's see. Yeah, tough luck. You didn't make it. Yes, I did. You just didn't hear about it yet. It's a good line. So he's going to have to go to this place called Espiritus Marcos. And then there's an exterior shot right there. He's sitting inside this shack or something. And I don't, we talked about this already. You'll tease that, I guess one might say that's actually from the movie, The Battle of Britain.
Yeah.
And those are
Royal Air Force.
Yeah. They're either Spitz or Hawker Hurricanes.
Yeah.
And they've got
British markings on them. Yeah, they do have the British markings on them.
It kills me. I mean, were there British in the Far East? Yeah. Hell yeah.
Yeah.
There were Canadians. Yeah. My grandfather was at Iwo Jima, for Christ's sakes. Yeah. But
I just find it weird, because I get using stock footage, right? Because it's cheap.
Yes.
But I'm sure there's American stock footage around.
There's got to be some.
Some
of the stock footage they use is from the movie Tora, Tora, Tora. They use and from the movie Midway. They use both of those a lot.
Yeah.
There's got to be footage in some of those of planes sitting on the ground, right? Anyway, there's some strange choices like that made, or for example, later on when they get to their island and it doesn't look like the tropics.
No.
I just let that go.
Yeah. I should point out that when he mentions Espirito Marcos, it made me think of Jason Reese down in Tennessee, because he refers to it as the armpit of the Pacific.
It's really
Jason lives in Lebanon, which he refers to as Armpit, Tennessee.
That's right.
So when I heard the word armpit, I went, hey, Jason.
I wonder if they know Jason. Jason's in the rear area. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, like there's a rear area in the Solomons.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah. Greg gets on the phone and he says he's got, he's with some general's staff. It's never figured out how he knows who the general is, but I guess he's looked some stuff up. Like there's no internet. Well,
I think you would kind of know who's in charge and stuff like that. You know, I mean, this is the military. They're, you know,
that's true. You would, that's fair.
Their orders and stuff like that. So.
They're signed by people. Okay. Yeah. That's fair. Okay. That's true. So he says he's with the general staff and he's got the general's dog. It's actually his dog. And he gets onto a DC-3, takes off his, cause he's wearing lieutenant's bars.
He's trying to become a major like he was before.
He was a major when he left.
He's brought back as a second lieutenant or lieutenant, as they would say. Yeah. And that's like the bottom,
the lowest officer rank. Yep.
Officer ranking. It's the bottom.
So he would be, he's still a fighter pilot, but he would be, wouldn't be running a squadron. And this actually happened too. Bowington had to, was isn't that correct? Yeah. He was, there were a lot of screwing around and there were phone calls made to important people. He calls, this did happen. And he gets on the phone. He talks to the person who's setting up flights and I got the general's dog here. So they hop on a DC-3. He's got the dog. And
see, this is the kind of thing that reminded me of MASH.
Totally.
This is the kind of thing that Hawkeye and Trapper or Hawkeye and BJ would have done.
Yeah.
Right. Like, you know, I've got or I remember, you know, an episode where Klinger has this sort of letter from the general and he goes, I don't know. Somebody told me to mention this letter from the general. And then he starts ordering all this other stuff because he's just mentioning the letters, the general's letter, and they're just sending him stuff. So
yeah,
that kind of thing.
Yeah. And stories that my grandfather told me about, because he was the, officer's cook on a ship and he said things you could do if you said, oh, I cook for the captain. People go, okay, over here. Here's some stuff. Like, so the world that's not that bad.
No. Yeah. I mean, and the army especially is notorious for that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Right, so you know. Then we get a newsreel and they always, one of the things the show does are these little newsreels. They're fun. It says Universal Newsreel, which didn't exist, but because it's a Universal show, they're also, it's funny. There's a few things in there that they wouldn't be like that in 1942. Yeah. Like when they said, as Marine foot soldiers, go call a Marine a soldier.
Yeah.
Go do that
to
his face. See how long you last.
Yeah.
They're Marines. I think that's really stupid and weird, but they don't like being called soldiers.
No, that's the Army. That's the Army. Exactly. Soldiers. We're Marines, man.
Yeah.
Listen to Wojo and Barney Miller. I'm a Marine.
Yeah. And they're always Marines. They always say they're Marines, right? Or as people in the U.S. Navy call them, crayon eaters. that's something I learned recently. They just call them crayon eaters. It's like, that's great. The joke in the U.S. military is that, you know, they're told to take a building. The Marines go in guns blazing and take the building. The Army calls in artillery. The Navy bombards them from the shore, and what the Air Force does is it just leases out the building.
Yeah.
Anyway, they also mention, I mean, they're setting up the next bit, obviously. It's also, I wouldn't say it's I wrote in our document, pro-Japanese, not the really way to put it, but it's a little bit too even-handed for a newsreel in 1942.
Yeah, it would be a lot more propagandist.
There'd be a lot of... There would be probably some pretty good racism in it too, which we don't see.
Yeah. I think it's probably that's what they were kind of doing, is they're just kind of cleaning it up for the 1970s.
And that's fine. That's
fine. I have no problem. I mean, we obviously will nitpick the historical inaccuracies.
Yeah.
Because it's fun.
Lots.
Because it's fun. Because
it's fun. Yeah. This is, ladies and gentlemen, we consider this fun, looking at a World War II TV show going, that's the wrong kind of. They didn't wear that rank insignia.
Look at those haircuts.
The haircuts, by the way, as a running joke and best episode ever. And when I talked about this in season 4, episode 3, I will tell you that I ramped it and raved about the haircuts. No one had these haircuts in World War II.
No.
It's like they said, it's the 70s. Let's just put some kind of World War II-ish stuff on them and say it's the war.
Yeah. I mean, and again, which is fine because I don't go to movies or TV shows for historical accuracy.
Exactly.
Don't go to his. Don't get your history from movies or TV shows.
No.
Or memes.
Yeah.
Or videos. Or videos that some douchebag has put up.
What you could do is actually go take a history class at your local college or university.
Yeah. Exactly.
But yes.
But we will. But we will nitpick because
we will nitpick. That's what we're gonna do.
That's fun. We're doing it all in a sense of fun.
They really overplay the importance of the air campaign, which makes sense. It's a show about pilots. Yeah. Now, air cover is really important. And battles were fought. The battle to take Henderson Field at Guadalcanal was to take a field. There's a reason that airfields are important.
And Midway, in many ways, was won because the air.
Midway is an air battle. Yeah. It really is
an air battle, you know.
So is Coral Sea, and so is the great Marianas Turkey Shoot, and you can go on, and air forces were incredibly important in the Pacific, but most of it was a really big infantry slog, the island hopping stuff.
Yeah.
And
also on the newsreel, they make reference to Bataan.
They do.
I think this is probably another reason why they don't sort of highlight that, because that is the beginning, obviously, of the Bataan Death March.
Yeah, which is named aptly. Yes.
Yeah. After the fall of Bataan, which is what the newsreel relates to, and the brutality of the Japanese soldiers.
Yeah.
To American and Filipino prisoners of war.
And it was like, it was bad. I mean, it was bad.
Like an American soldier would fall to the ground and they would just shoot him.
They'd be lucky if they shot him, right?
Yeah.
And often they'd cut off his head with a sword or something. They were really, it was bad.
Whereas the producers of this TV show are going, we don't want to talk about that. Yeah,
we're not
going
to talk about that.
We want to keep it light.
Exactly. We're going to keep the Pacific Island Hopping Campaign it's a light fun war.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's probably the least light fun war the world has seen.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, the most it's bad.
Yeah, it's
not
bad.
It's not a good thing. Okay, we get over to Spiros Marcos, which is an island that doesn't exist. And here we have Colonel Lard, and he's based on a guy that Boeington ran into in the Pacific,
Joseph
right?
Smoke. Yeah.
And they
Lieutenant Colonel Joseph Smoke.
And they never reconciled, even though Boeington eventually was awarded the Congressional Freaking Medal of Honor, meaning that colonel would have to actually salute, because you always salute people with a Medal of Honor, no matter what your rank is. But they never forgave each other, which is kind of weird.
Because Smoke was very much like Laird, a kind of by the book guy. But although I do like this sort of interchange between the two of them, because I do like Laird here, because he says, he goes, you go by the book, do you? He goes, I go by two books.
Yeah, that's right.
The Marine, he goes, let me guess. One's the Marine Corps manual. yes. And the other one's is the naval regulations.
Yeah. Doesn't Boeington say, I've heard it's like 1,000 pages long. I'm waiting for a short version to come out. And he said, it's actually 1,256 pages. And you're going to live by it.
Yeah.
And then he puts Greg under arrest immediately.
Yeah.
The difference between between Lard and the guy he's based on is that Lard kind of grudgingly knows that Boeington's good eventually in the show.
Yeah.
Whereas that didn't really happen. Right. So he puts Greg under house arrest.
Yeah. And that's Dana Elkar.
Yeah.
Playing.
And he's really good as Lard too.
He's
a good performance. It really is.
He's one of those actors that when you watch him, you never really see him acting.
No,
and then
that's
when you go back and you look at him like we're doing and kind of like looking at him a little bit more closely.
Yeah.
He's really good.
He's really good. There's a lot of people from back then. And we've been talking about this in the Rockford podcast, is that there's a lot of people that just didn't get a chance to be in movies and stuff. It was a different world.
Yeah.
But they're actually really solid actors, generally. Yeah. And he's one of them. He showed up a lot in the 70s and 80s, into the 90s. And he did a good job as this. Yeah. So Greg calls the Pentagon, which is interesting, as the Pentagon didn't exist yet.
they started building it in 1941.
So it wasn't finished
40,
yet.
43. I think it was 43.
I think by 43 it was finished,
Oh, and I should also point out the reason he's a Marine.
Yep.
The podcast that I listened to, American Presidents, also would confuse why George Bush would be in because he was in the Navy as a pilot. But remember, the Air Force wasn't a thing until 1947. Like, there was no American Air Force.
Yes.
There was no branch, that branch of the military. So you had Marines, you had Air Force, you had Army pilots, you had Marine pilots, and you had Navy pilots.
Yeah.
I mean, you still have Navy pilots, but.
And you still have Marine today, pilots, too, because the Marines are basically their own little thing.
Yeah. But the Air Force wasn't established as a separate military branch till 1947.
You know what the biggest air force in the world is? The United States Air Force. You know what the second biggest air force in the world is? The United Marine States Navy.
Well, Navy, right?
The second biggest. And about the fourth biggest after the Royal Air Force is the United States Marine Corps. Like, the Americans have planes.
They like their planes.
Hey, I like their planes.
Airplanes are cool.
They've got some nice looking planes. Right. So he calls the Pentagon. He calls General Nimitz. The idea that he could get through to Nimitz to me is fascinating because he couldn't.
Also, Nimitz wasn't in Washington at the time, anyway. Even if the Pentagon existed, he was in Hawaii. He was in the Pacific.
He was running the freaking war.
Yeah, exactly. So he was in the Pacific. He wasn't in Washington.
And also, his son was named Chet, not Ted. Yeah. That's again. I just go, yeah, fine.
It would have been funnier if he had said, "I don't have a son named Ted."
Yeah, that would have been better. He said, "What's your son's name?"
My son's Chet.
That's what I said, sir. But the thing is, Chet served in a submarine, so the idea that he could make a phone call to a place that doesn't exist from a submarine, but he convinces them that do you remember this thing where I got the deal that was I get out as a major, or I get
and that was
a,
that
major?
Was a thing that yep. that was a thing. Nimitz.
That's right.
Like the when he they formed the Flying Tigers, Nimitz did give his okay for it, and it wasn't in the Pentagon, but Nimitz did have the top secret documents about them. So this part is actually true.
This is true, except for the phone call. Well,
except for the phone call, but his point about Nimitz having the documentation that is actually true.
I liked when he's doing the, and then also SERP.
The static.
Yeah. And of course, you got to realize that that wouldn't be ridiculous back then, right? Because
no,
it's not like they had satellite communication.
Exactly.
So, it wouldn't. You know, there would be dropouts, but he gets his major's commission back. Yay!
Yeah.
And he does at the end say "good hunting," which is what you say to a fighter pilot. So I like that. There's the odd little thing, and Greg Bowington, the real Greg Bowington, actually acted as a consultant on the show. And I think there are things like that where he said, "Well, you always end your conversations with good hunting." So that'd probably be something.
And
that
he does appear in the episode.
Yes.
Bowington.
Which is great. Yeah.
But good. It is kind of weird when you think about it. You know, it's like, good. Go out and kill those other people.
Yeah. There's something weird about it.
But again, you know, when you're in that kind of situation, you kind of have to distance yourself from that.
Yeah. Oh, you have
because
to.
Because you can't think about it because you won't be, you'll stop being an effective pilot.
That's right.
Right. You know, and the war is lost.
Exactly.
You know, and, you know, World War II needed to be won.
Yeah. It was kind of an important
one. I'll make that controversial statement right now. Yeah. World War II needed to be won.
In the words of Marv Levy, when asked after the fourth bill, when the Bills were going to go to their fourth straight Super Bowl and they hadn't won one yet, and he was asked, "Is this a must-win situation?" He said, "This is a football game. World War II is a must-win situation."
He also said, "I don't think there were many soldiers at D-Day running across the beach going football."
I like Marv Levy a lot.
Yeah, Marv Levy was cool. I like Marv Levy.
We see General Moore. General Moore is probably my favorite non-squadron character in the show. I like him a lot.
Yeah, Simon Oakland, the great Simon Oakland.
And he shows up and he says, "You've got crappy taste in bourbon." If I want spiritual advice, I'd get drunk with a chaplain. Is what I love. Greg's thing is, if I'm going to talk to somebody, I will be drinking.
Yeah. and in real life, the guy that he's based on, James Moore, was actually Bowington's drinking buddy.
Yeah, which is great.
They did drink, you know. It's kind of weird, and I think it's great for a TV show because you got Lard, like the by the book hard ass
classic middle manager, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And then you got Moore, kind of the boozer, you know, the smoozing boozer, because he knows that Lard's disciplinarian.
Yeah,
right. You know, it's like, you know, I don't know if it's as much today, but sort of the way divorced couples were in the 70s, where the father, because he came out on the weekends, the father was the fun guy and the mother was
the
mom's
a disciplinarian. Yeah,
you know, and Lard is the mother and Moore is the father, because he's He's a lot more fun.
To put this in terms that would probably resonate with our jobs, Greg's a faculty member. Lard is a dean, and yeah. Moore is the university president, who's actually kind of cool.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe, yeah. Yeah. But yeah, yeah, so he's hanging out there.
Our university president.
Yeah, it's, and I don't, I've never been drinking with our president. She's okay, but I've never been out drinking with her. I like when he's going to fight him. He says, you know, that he's a general. He goes, come on, out you go, Sparky. And he says, just wait a second till Sparky gets his coat off. And it's like, yeah. He sees the stars and it's like, ooh.
Oh, shoot. Yeah, because he doesn't believe that he's Moore at first.
And he also says, like, at one point, is it this scene or later on? And he just says, I've done it again. It's just like, yeah. I always do stupid things.
Yeah.
Yeah, there it is. Oh, boy, I've done it again. Boynton is told at this point he's too old. They say he's 35 in the show. I think Pappy in real life was 31.
Well, he's born in 1912. So, okay, he would have been 30 and 42.
Okay, so but it's at that time it was too old to be a fighter pilot.
Yeah, yeah, because most of the other, and this is why he ends up with the nickname Pappy.
Yep,
is because most of the other ones were like other pilots were like 21, 22.
Yeah,
you know, and I know that's only 8 years, but the difference between 22 and 30
with your reflexes
is great.
Yeah, and especially when you're flying something, you're not flying this thing isn't an F-35. You're not flying this baby by wire, and you can't just look around in your helmet to lock onto targets. Yeah. It's an entirely different situation. Because pilots now are into their 30s. It's very common. You know, and in fact, would have come out of in our Air Force, in the American military, etc. You have to be an officer. So in that case, you're 22 at least, because you've done 4 years of university.
Yeah.
So yeah, a lot of times the guys are into their 30s, but not then. It wasn't like that, and that's why they called him Pappy or Gramps, which was a common nickname for anybody over like 25.
And Gutterman at one point in this episode does call him Gramps.
Yep, they call him a lot in this episode. That's right.
Yeah, that's what they originally called him, and they eventually it changed to Pappy.
Yes, which it's funny because he gets called Pappy in the book, and it says by Greg Pappy Boynton. Yeah,
yeah.
So Greg's doing paperwork with Larry Casey. I like Larry. Larry's the only straight edge guy in the whole series. Well, straight edge, cool guy. Colonel Love, straight edge guy. But he's not cool. Yeah. So he's doing court martial.
He's using his powers for evil.
Yeah, exactly.
Whereas Casey's using his powers for good.
And Casey's just trying to get through the war. Casey's a trained fighter pilot, but he's working on court martial.
And no matter what, you do need a guy like that in your outfit.
Yes. A guy to actually fill out forms.
Who organizes
things like ordering fuel. Like
exactly.
Right.
You need somebody who knows how to get stuff done.
Yeah. So he's sitting there with Larry's doing that, and he's doing this the court martial paperwork, whereas Greg's doing sort of supply stuff, right?
Yeah, supply stuff.
And then he says, how did you like to get out of this ticker tape foxhole and into a combat unit? So what happens is he takes the guys who are going to be court-martialed, and he's going to turn them into a squadron. In real life, what the real Greg Boynton did was he took the list of all the unattached pilots who were going to be replacements. And he said, well, there's enough of us here. Could we be a squadron? And that's how it really got formed. They weren't all screw-ups and guys who were going to be court-martialed.
Yeah. And Casey is uncomfortable with his job because he just gets off the ship, and now he's passing judgment on these guys who have been fighting the war for like the last year. He feels very, his conscience is very conflicted because he's been ordered to do this, but he doesn't feel he has the right because he's never been in a combat situation. He hasn't, he's just a new guy.
Yeah.
And these are all the sort of like the grizzled veterans, as it were.
Yeah.
And he feels very uncomfortable doing this.
Yeah.
Because of that.
Yeah. And I mean, that I like. I think that would have been a very common attitude that people would have had, which is like, I who am I, man?
Yeah.
I'm just some guy. These guys have been getting shot at and such. You know? Yeah. So I kind of like that. So what we have here is he's got the screw ups. And he's going to order they all show up at a bar. By the way, the amount of infrastructure on Espiritus Marcos is really impressive, considering it's supposedly in the Solomon Islands.
Yeah.
That officers' club looks like it's at some grand hotel in Singapore.
Oh yeah, you expect the pool to be there or something like that.
I know it was just filmed at some soundstage. Yeah. That's fine, but the Officers Club would have been a freaking Quonset hut. It would.
Yeah.
So you get,
well, again, look at MASH. Look at MASH.
Oh yeah.
The Officers Club that they have there, it's basically just a Quonset hut.
Yeah.
With a bar.
Yeah, and that's what this—that's what this should have.
That's
been.
What this would have been. And and to be fair, once they get into the series, it's more like that.
It's more like that. Yeah, exactly. So we meet everybody there, all the pilots, also two extra people we never see again, which they do. Yeah.
Well, I mean, you know, it's once you get into the TV show, you need to, because of costs, you know, you have to. I mean, they had a big cast to begin with.
They did.
You know, but you know, you had to reduce costs somehow.
That's right.
So these two guys, you don't want to get rid of Dan Fielding or Corky from Tales of the Gold Monkey.
Exactly.
Also, did you notice a mistake?
Which one? Which was the mistake?
I noticed it for some reason, probably because I was paying attention. But when like TJ,
yes, that's right.
When Pappy's looking through, when Boeington's looking through the files, you see his name as James T.
Yes,
so it should be JT, not TJ. And suddenly because T is his, it doesn't give his name.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking it's Tiberius, of course.
Yeah, obviously. What else could
James
it be?
Tiberius, right?
Yeah, what else could it be?
But they start calling him TJ, even though according to the file,
his first name is
James.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, which for listeners, this is why I'm an academic, because I notice shit like this.
That's right. Believe me, I was watching an episode of what the hell? I think it might have been a Black Sheep I was watching last night, and I freeze framed it and took a screenshot to read a form. So
yeah,
we are kindred spirits, my friend.
Yeah.
Also, did you notice when they went into they go into this hangar and he puts out a sign that says it's infested with malaria, which Boeington actually did get in his real life.
He did.
In the prison camp, though, I think, right?
Yeah.
Which is amazing. He lived. I'm still kind of blown away that he survived the war. I think he was blown away that he survived the war. They meet up in that bar, and they go to this, to a hangar, puts the sign out. Did you notice that a guy was wearing a ball cap?
Yes.
Like a U.S. Navy ball cap. That was not a thing. That didn't start till the 60s.
Yeah.
So he's got like a Vietnam era ball cap on.
Yeah.
Again, I just let it go. I find it funny when I see things like that. It's wrong.
Well, that's just to keep all his long hair up.
That's probably what it was, too.
Yeah.
So TJ had stolen a bunch of scotch. That's why that was his crime, and also fought a lot.
You'll notice that a lot of them have fought a lot.
A lot of it's fighting.
A lot of it's fighting.
A lot of fist fights. You know, have you noticed that in TV, men get into more fist fights than, say, you've gotten into in your life as a grown man?
Yes, yes, yeah. Yep.
Because I was in one when I was 19. That's the last time I was in a fight.
I think I was in two.
Okay, see, so it's not lots.
One when I was in Detroit.
Sure.
And one when I was in junior high. Okay. Which wasn't really a fist fight because we were between the buses and neither of us connected with a punch.
Okay.
So can you really call it a fist fight if nobody actually? I mean, we swang our fists.
Yeah.
Or swung our fists, I guess.
Swang.
I like swang better. We swang our fists.
Yeah.
We never
swangification.
Yeah. We never connected.
That's too bad, because it would have been even a better story if you had beaten somebody up. I don't know. That was a weird thing to say.
I guess.
I don't know. This is when Gutterman decides to challenge Pappy to a fight.
Yeah.
I think Whitmore was probably the best actor in the show.
Oh, he was. Yeah.
Yeah. Like he had real chops. He could really act. Eh? Yeah.
And Gutterman, I mean, you know, he's probably my favorite character.
Oh, same here. My favorite character in the show. Favorite member of the Black Sheep, for sure.
Yeah. I mean, because he has a little bit more of a, we'll say it. He ends up suffering what we now refer to today as PTSD.
And he's got, there's a depth to the performance there that you don't see from anybody else.
Exactly.
I'm not saying any people were shitty. There are people in the show in season two, especially that were
very good,
who were not very good, but who later went on to do a lot of directing of TV shows. So good on him. But you know, Whitmore was clearly the best actor, I think, in the whole series. Yeah. And it's a good performance. And he does it here. And he's like, well, why don't we fight there, Gramps?
Yeah.
They start fighting. then the MPs show up, and they wouldn't be the MPs. It's a naval base. Yep. They'd be the SPs, yep, the shore patrol. But anyway, that's the kind of mistake that bugs me, actually. Yeah. The thing about the ball cap, whatever. But
my thing is that most viewers will know what an MP is, and they won't know what a shore patrol is.
They wouldn't know what SP
I think
stood
that's
for.
What it is. That's right. Why the Pentagon is. Everybody knows where the Pentagon is.
Yeah.
Right. So, and Nimitz would be at the Pentagon.
Yes.
So they just use Pentagon, so they don't have to explain, you know, anything.
Yes. You don't have to get a lot of exposition. That's you're probably right.
That's,
that's fine. They end up, stealing the Jeeps, the black sheep do. They steal the Jeeps
and the Scotch,
obviously. And they go to the beach for no apparent reason. Yeah. I don't know. A beach of the Solomons, by the way, that has no defenses, which seems incredibly unlikely.
Yeah.
Just don't think that would be like that. Fight, of course, ends in a draw. And
yeah, I find that interesting. Yeah. Because, you know, I don't know I've never been in the military, so I don't know if this is an actual thing in the military.
Okay.
But in TV shows, this kind of thing is to show dominance.
Yes, that's right.
Right? So you know, to get respect, Bowington, as an older man, has to beat the younger man to show that he's capable. You know, and of course, in a wartime situation, your leader needs to be a tough guy.
Oh yeah,
right. Your leader can't be weak. And I understand that, but it's interesting that it ends at kind of a tie.
Yeah,
because it's almost like they're equals.
Yeah.
You know, it's almost like a kind of King Arthur and the Round Table kind of idea. And what King Arthur has a round table is there's no person at the head of the table because it's a round table. There is no head. So it's almost as if they're equals, which I find very, very interesting.
It's interesting. Yeah. As a thing to do in something like this, because somebody does have to run the show.
Yeah.
The Russians tried during the Russian Civil War to have no leadership and no officers because all people were equal. It didn't work out well. And then they suddenly had officers and NCOs again, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Cause I mean, as a communist, I mean, I'm a communist.
Yeah.
I know that you need somebody in charge.
Somebody has to
You need
things.
Somebody to say we're doing this.
Yeah.
Right. You know?
Yeah. And it's funny that they would do that. But anyway, that's fine. They have their fight. And then it's like, well, what I'm going to do is I'm going to form a squadron with these screw ups. And he gets asked, how are you going to do it? He goes, well, I'm going to steal it.
Yeah.
And again, that's not exactly what Greg Bowington really did.
No,
he did something unorthodox. He didn't actually steal a squadron.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because in real life, the Marines would have went, no.
Yeah. They would have just said, no, that's not a thing.
We're not doing that.
You can't just do that. Yeah. So Lard gets upset that none of the court martials went through. Should be courts martial, shouldn't it?
It should be courts martial.
Yeah, I was thinking. I know it would be courts martial generally, but I wonder if. But yeah, I think even in this case it would be.
Yeah, courts martial.
Lard confronts Larry, and Greg tells him he's been doing it, and this is the first instance of Lard yelling, "Damn it, Bowington!" which is something he yelled at least twice an episode. pretty great.
But as I said, every hero needs a foil.
Yeah, and his is Lard, and it's fun and. There's a weird, eventually within a couple of episodes, there's a weird mutual grudging respect for each other.
Yeah.
Even Greg understands there actually have to be regulations in the Marine Corps. Things like that. Now the big thing is, where are you going to find planes?
Yeah.
Now these planes were found in private collectors' hands, but not during the war. So what's going to happen here? Gutterman, who's the XO, he's going to go find a base somewhere they can go. He says, go up and down the slot. The slot is, if folks who don't know, if you look at a map of the Solomon Islands, you will see what they call the, it's easy to see why they call it the slot. There's like,
Just looks like almost like a channel.
Yeah.
Right. With islands on either side. And you know, it's very, very straight.
Yeah. It's very, there's a reason it's called a slot. It looks like a slot. And that's where most of the air and sea battles during the Solomon Islands campaigns were fought. You know, there's a part of, by Guadalcanal, there's a little inlet called Iron Bottom Sound because it's just full of American and Japanese sunk ships and dead people. They want somewhere they can go up and down the slot and get home. So they got to find a good island and to get the You got to get a squadron. You can't just and get some planes. So Greg puts on a medical insignia, and he talks to a medical officer played by James Martaw. And I think James Martaw is the kind of guy who was in a lot of things.
Yeah, he was. He's again one of those character actors whose faces you know.
Yeah,
he was in Rockford.
Yeah,
a few times.
He was even always in 30, playing a different character. He was in 30 Rock into the 2010s. Yeah. Like, yeah. And I think he may even still be around.
Yeah. Yeah, I think he is. I think he's still alive.
Yeah. He was in what, 4 episodes of Rockford? Yeah. So yeah, what's going to happen is he's going to get the real 214 grounded by saying they have malaria. Also, get me some blank medical forms. And I love, he says it with enough confidence that the guy's like, but first he's like, but why? So I can change the diagnosis.
Yeah.
He'd actually
because Boeington's pretending to be a medical officer here.
Yeah. He's like, you can't do that. Well, if they'd ran the right tests, he says, speaking in a series of mumbo jumbo terms.
Yeah. Yeah. It sounds very medical like, but it's all nonsense.
Yeah. And of course, Greg knows that the guy working in the medical office isn't a doctor.
No.
He's just a clerk, right? So he'll just go, okay, sir.
And they're in the military, so you defer to authority.
Yeah, exactly. It's all built on that. Yes.
And you know, because if you don't, then the military falls apart.
Yeah, it doesn't work without a hierarchy. You need a hierarchy in the military.
And so you have somebody who you think is a doctor.
Yeah.
Telling you something.
Yeah. So you do
you're
it.
You're going to listen.
Yeah. Of course you are. It just makes sense. So Jim's also been off finding an island. He's found an island called Vela La Cava, which also doesn't exist. The real island that they were on was called Vela La Vela, which I was reading about it yesterday. It's a province of the Republic of the Solomon Islands.
Yeah.
And it turns out there's a hospital there with nurses.
Yeah.
And he says, you know, how did you get these guys off? You know, how did you get the real 214 off there? And he said, Greg says, they've all got malaria. It's the worst thing I've seen in my 2-hour medical career. It's a good line. It's a very MASH-like line, actually.
Yep. It's very, very MASH-like here, I think.
Yeah, very is. Very MASH-like.
And just so that everybody knows, Gutterman becomes the executive officer because he's the captain.
He's a captain, yep.
And everybody else is either a lieutenant or a first or second lieutenant.
Yep.
So, you know, and so, like, if you know your military stuff, mm-hmm. In that scene when they're calling off the names, you know, and they're all lieutenants, and then there's Captain Gutterman, it's like he's going to be second in command.
Yeah,
because he has the rank. He's got the rank.
Exactly. And the real Vela La Vela didn't have a hot. It had some kind of post on it where they could get medical alcohol and they'd mix it with limes that grew on the island and sugar, and they would make what they called punch, which of course
sounds terrible.
But I guess if you're an actual alcoholic, it's just fine.
Yeah. Yeah. It's fine. Better than drinking Listerine or something like that.
There's a scene later in the series where Greg wakes up in the morning and drinks some aftershave. So it's yep. Right. So there's nurses as well. It's all going to be very exciting. They're setting this up. Mm-hmm. We go to General Moore's quarters. I like General Moore's little Quonset hut. He's got a little bar in it.
Yep.
And he says, we're going to have a luau. Would you like to come to a luau? Or the girls? 30 nurses. And he takes off his stars and he says, I love when General Moore says, I learned a while ago that generals don't make out.
Yeah.
It's good. You know, it's 1943 on the beach in the Solomons. They wouldn't have been allowed to have a fire.
No,
be so completely blacked out. But
yeah,
it's fine.
It's the TV show.
It's a TV show.
It's a luau. You need to have fire at a luau.
Yeah. And who's there but Nurse Sharon Gless?
Sharon Gless.
It's funny. We saw her in Rockford recently.
Yep.
And I said then I'm always used to just her as in Cagney and Lacey. And I'm not used to her playing roles like this, where she's playing, well, a young woman who is in a war and also looking for a good time. Good on her.
Yep.
It's funny because she just plays against type again, at least in my head, and does a nice job.
Yep. No, she's good here.
Is there any music? Like, where'd that music come from they're dancing to, Steve?
I don't know.
The conga line, but
there's no music. If you listen, there does sound like some kind of congas in the background.
Okay.
Because so as Boyington and Glass's character are dancing, behind them there's a conga line going, which, as you and I both have pointed out, we both hate
the conga line. It's the worst.
But there does seem to be in the background kind of conga music.
It does.
But the music that, but there's no music that they're dancing to.
No, no, there isn't. It's very weird. It's also, you know,
yeah,
I find all this a little bit sexual harassy.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, not just the 1970s view of gender relations, but the 1940s view of gender relations. Not necessarily as progressive as...
No, no. And I will give, in fact, the show like, some credit there, because...
Yeah,
that's fine, because that's a lot closer to how the world was. Yeah,
you know, and again, very MASH like too. If you look at MASH, there are times, especially sort of Hawkeye's behavior, where it's like
awful. It's
like
vile.
He's hiding in bags and foot lockers to jump out at women, and it's like
and having like a, remember the one where he had the, oh, I forget what it was, but he had like a raffle to see who would win a date with him. Yeah.
Yeah, the one where he accidentally goes blind, and then he pretends that at the end he pretends that he's still blind, so that he can go in and watch the nurses undress. It's like
Today that'd get you kicked out of the military.
But you know, again, to be fair to as you said, to be fair to them, it's not as bad as it could have been.
It could have been a lot worse.
Yes. It could have been a lot worse.
I like he's got the medical insignia on. People keep coming up to me asking me for medical alcohol, which I think was a reference to the fact that the real 214, or at least Greg, used to drink medical alcohol with limes and any sugar they could find, and they called it punch. So that's pretty gross.
I mean, you know, I mean, to be fair, they probably weren't getting a lot of the high quality alcohol anyway.
Well, they weren't getting any of the scotch they always seem to have on the show.
No. And, you know, if you're an alcoholic.
Oh, yeah.
You need your booze.
You need your booze. Exactly. Especially if you're an alcoholic who needs to fly a plane. And Greg used to, the real Pappy Boyington, would drink while flying.
Yes.
Also smoked while flying. Set up a system in his plane with wires so he could even have a nap on long missions.
Yeah.
That's professional level drinking, Steve. That's screw the Olympics GoPro.
Yep. Exactly.
It's amazing that he lived as long as he did. So Greg lays it out.
I know.
It's bizarre. Greg lays it out to the general and he says, take a chance, general, take a chance on all these bumps, which of course is the show, right? And I think, and this really, if you were watching this as a two-part episode split up, that would be almost certainly where they quit the episode. Because the next half of this, which we'll talk about next month, is they do the first real black sheep mission.
Exactly. And, you know, again, it ends on not that line, but the line is, he says, well, what are you going to call a squadron? He goes, I'll call them what they are. Black sheep.
Yeah. And it's really nice.
Cut.
Damn. Yeah. Did I miss anything, Steve?
I don't think so.
Yeah, I think we're okay, right? I think we covered most of it.
I think there was one thing that I wanted to mention that I thought was kind of funny. Where is it? Just when Chenault tries to take the dog, and Boyington says, the dog hates jerks. He says, why is he growling? The dog hates jerks.
Yeah, running thing, right? The dog, which basically looks like, I keep expecting Don Cherry to show up.
Yeah.
I imagine Don Cherry thinks actually World War II was just like this.
Probably,
He probably thinks this is a documentary.
Yeah. And we should also point out that Stephen J. Cannell created it, or co-created it anyway.
Yeah.
And the theme, again, was Mike Post and Pete Carpenter.
Yeah.
I've
seen some Anita Rosenberg credits as well watching this, which is kind of cool. So a lot of the same crew.
I mean, because Cannell, of course, would have brought over people he trusted to work, you know, and it, which is probably why James Whitmore Jr. is there, is because he worked with them with Rockford. And so he knows what he can do. And the theme song was Mike Post and Pete Carpenter. And if you listen, I know that I've heard the theme song a lot, but if you listen to it and the theme to Tales of the Gold Monkey, they're very similar.
Are they?
Yeah, there the, okay. you can hear sort of echoes of both of them, which of course Post and Carpenter did Tales of the Gold Monkey theme song too.
Sure. So I mean, it's the theme's great. Which you heard at the beginning part of it. You heard the first newsreel. When we go out, we thought we'd play something from the era, and Steve's suggestion was, "Don't sit under the apple tree."
Yep. Because the Andrews sisters.
Andrews sisters.
The Andrews sisters were great.
They were great. You know, there, right. there was, when yeah. I was younger, they bugged me, but I think they just bugged me because really old people listened to them. I listen to it now. It's like, this is great.
Yeah, and I have a clip or around here somewhere. I can send it to you, but where they're doing this kind of sort of rally, war rally thing. And they have a guy on there who's not very good, and he's talking. I mean, he's an officer, a military officer. So he's not an actor, but he's acting very wooden.
Yeah,
and he's talking like this because he's not used
he's
to being
not
on
used
camera.
To being on camera, yeah.
And then he introduces the Andrews sisters, and they come on, and they are perfect.
Of course, yeah.
Right, they're confident, they're easy, you can really tell that they're professionals, and then they kick into a song. I forget which one. It might have been don't sit under the apple tree, but they start singing, and it's like, oh, this is great. So that was my, and obviously it's the you know, the a very popular song at the time,
and and of course the theme of it is I'm going off to war, don't be with anybody else, please.
Don't fool around
I'll be back.
Yeah,
I'll be back. So on that note, I will see you next time when we'll talk about Rockford. And
Rockford. Not Mad Men, though.
We're done with Mad Men.
Yeah.
Probably.
Probably.
All right, man. Thanks a lot. And I will talk to you again soon.
All right. See ya.
Where's my fucking mouse pointer. There it is. Okay. I should leave that part in. Where's my fucking mouse pointer?
Hello? Peggy?
Pizza House!